Welcome to the award-winning Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashinger, covering metaphysics, ETs, shamanism, and channeling. Here you will find spiritual inspiration from today's thought leaders, along with cutting-edge insights from our interstellar brothers and sisters and ancient shamanic wisdom. Now, here's a new episode of Dare to Dream with your host, Debbie Dashinger.
This is Debbie Dashinger. Welcome to the show. Today, yet another great installment, yet another great episode. I don't know about you, but I find all of these to be a masterclass. So it is my joy to show up for all these programs. And thank you for the great comments you guys leave. It really means a lot to read your feedback on the shows. I do read them. I do care. And please, if you love the conversation, send it. Send it to people you know will also appreciate it, because that's the nature of the beast, right? That's the nature of how these networks work. The more people who watch, like, send, etc., the more we'll put this really good, important at this time information in front of those eyes and ears of folks who really are hungry for this and maybe are not aware yet of the show. So thanks so much for that. And today I'm going to be talking to Jason Quitt. He is the author of Egyptian Postures, Astral Genesis, and Gates of the Anunnaki. It's going to be an exciting conversation. Dare to Dream podcast won 3 Talk Radio Change Awards, the COVR Award for Best Radio and Podcast Show. Welp magazine named Dare to Dream one of the top 20 best podcasts to listen to this year, and is high ranking on Apple Podcasts. This show is sponsored by Dr. Dean here and Access Consciousness. They do energy healing work out in the world. If you would like to be a part of that or become a facilitator, go to Dr. Dean here, HEER.com. Would you like to know what your galactic ancestry is? Well, I have a free gift for you. You can unlock your cosmic potential with a starseed video and report exploring over 19 different kinds of galactic starseeds and the origins, where you are from originally. It's very detailed, and you don't want to miss the chance to connect with your star lineage. Go to debbiedashinger.com/starseed, debbiedashinger.com/starseed. And just to preempt, my guest today, Jason, and I will both be speaking at the Los Angeles Conscious Life Expo. I am going to have the link for tickets in the show notes or description, so go there. It's February 2025. You don't want to miss this. The best of the best speakers come and present. It is 4 days of amazingness. It is truly, of all the many events I do every year, this is my favorite. So please, I can't wait to meet you there. As always, so many of you come up to me at Conscious Life Expo saying you're there because of the show. And we'll have ticket links for you because it's live now. My guest, Jason Quitt, is the author of Gates of the Anunnaki, Sacred Geometry, Keys to the Gods, Astral Genesis, Astrological Keys to the Gods, and Egyptian Postures of Power, Mysticism, Movements, Meditations. Jason has been teaching and lecturing on mysticism, shamanism, out-of-body experiences, astral projection, meditation, and Qigong since 2010. Jason has been studying various energy modalities and spiritual practices since 2002. After graduating from the Institute of Energy Wellness in 2005, Jason has continued his journey into the ancient systems of mysticism, metaphysics, wellness, and shamanism to this day. If you'd like to learn more about him, his work, go to thecrystalsun.com, thecrystalsun.com. And with that, I welcome Jason to the Dare to Dream show. It's great to have you. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Yeah. So much to cover there. That's a pretty, for me, yummy bio to dig my teeth into. So I want to start with your book, Egyptian Postures of Power, which I know delves into ancient mysticism and energy practices. What drew you to Egyptian tradition specifically?
It's a very, very long answer, which we'll get into. This is the book. Right here, Egyptian Postures of Power. And when I started to go through my spiritual awakening, which was early 2002, 2003, I had a lot of these out-of-body experiences, a lot of communication with, call them astral beings or just beings from not this world. And basically they told me that energetically I was very ill. And it was like a call for help. So they said that if I continue going down my path, if I continue leaving my body, I'd have a lot of issues in the future, a lot of health-related issues. They would tell me that my energy field was pretty much like Swiss cheese. It wasn't a good energy field. And they said that that kind of energy field, once you get into this world, once you start leaving your body, you're basically opening yourself up to influence. You're opening yourself up to basically getting things that hang off of you, attracted to you. And they say over time, that would cause a very shortened life or, you know, disease coming into my future. So basically, I got warned that if I was going to continue doing what I was doing, that I had to smarten up and learn about energetic health. And this is where I got into Qigong. I was led into Qigong. I was led into shamanism and energy medicine because I had to kind of figure out all these messages that I was receiving, which was a very strong call to action. Seeing that they basically said that it would not end well if I continued doing what I was doing. So I started practicing Qigong. And even though I was having all these experiences, when I came back to my body, I'm just regular me. There's no gifts or special abilities or anything like that. I would say I was extremely numb, even emotionally extremely numb. And I practiced religiously Qigong, which is just basically movements that circulate energy. And it took me about a year of practice before I could actually feel energy. So it's really interesting because when we start, many of us don't feel anything. And it's more like a spiritual or energetic philosophy. Energy is just a philosophy and we understand it at a mental level. But when you practice Qigong and you start working with the energy, over time, you start to sensitize yourself to what it feels like. So you can feel the movement of the energy through the body. You can feel the energy of the environment. And then you can start to read and pick up on things. So this is where practicing Qigong led me. It opened me up physically so I can start to have this connection to the energetic world while I'm awake and breathing, you know. And then I got into these cylinders, which were called Egyptian pharaoh cylinders. They're not really in arm's reach. I can't show them to you right now. But basically, I started practicing with these pharaoh cylinders, which were Egyptian, and I was using them in my Qigong practice. And I started to have these out-of-body experiences while I was sleeping, and I was taken to Egypt to learn. And before that, I had no real connection to Egypt whatsoever. I never even thought about it as anything in my practice. But I was taken there, and I was taken into this temple where I would stand in front of this person that looked like a pharaoh. They had this hat on, and they were just kind of standing in a posture in front of me. And intuitively, I knew that I had to kind of copy this person. So I would stand in front of this person in this temple, and I would, whatever movement they would do, whatever posture they would go into, I would just copy them.
In your mind's eye, you'd copy them, or would you physically replicate?
No, this was like an out-of-body astral experience. So the way it is, think of it like the most intense lucid dream.
Now I got the connect of how that manifested. Got it.
Yeah, so I'd be taken and I would be basically in this temple with this person. And it's kind of like a class. So I would just copy whatever I was shown. There was no communication whatsoever. It was just silence and them doing the postures. And when I did this posture, I can feel like this thing open up above my head. And it felt like a very strong waterfall. If you've ever been underneath a waterfall and you feel the water hitting on your head and shoulders, that was exactly the same sensation. But instead of it being water, it felt like photons, it was like light, but a lot of heat, and it was very tingly. So it just felt like this photonic heat vibration energy going through every cell of my body. And it was extremely intense. I've never felt anything like that before. And it was so intense, basically, my whole body would just shake, feeling that energy going through it. And when I would come back from these experiences, obviously I'd be sleeping. So I wake up in my bed and I'd be holding the posture in the
Wow.
bed. So I'd be physically holding the posture in my bed, even like with my left foot up. So my left foot was even up
Wow.
in the bed with my arms, like the statues. And when I would disc, and I still felt that energy going through me. And the moment I disconnected the posture, the energy just shut off. And I thought to myself, this is the most amazing experience that I've felt, especially with Qigong postures. And everybody has a coffee table book of Egyptian art. So I had one in my house and I opened it up and I was looking through the statues and I realized that a lot of these postures that are being shown to me in these journeys are depicted in these statues. So this it just was like a kind of a eureka experience where I was like, maybe these Egyptians were practicing an ancient form of Qigong and postures to go put themselves into a resonance with the universal forces.
Wow.
And so that kind of experience led me on this 20 plus year journey already of trying to figure out the connection between these ancient Egyptian mystics, these po body postures, the sacred knowledge that was lost, and try to kind of put it back together. And that's what the book Egyptian Postures of Power is all about.
And so, are you still using them? And if so, how do the postures help you harness energy in your life today?
Okay, well, think of it like a toolbox. You have a toolbox of knowledge that you can use, and each posture has a very specific purpose. So, yes, I still use it today. And it depends on what I need at the moment. So, for example, there's a posture that I teach everyone. I usually do it at the beginning of my classes where I say, take your right hand in a fist and put it over your heart. And then take your left hand in a fist and put it over your left leg, just kind of like a sitting posture like this, and just breathe. And we call this the balancing posture. And when we sit and meditate just in this posture, it's like we pull our energy back into our body because, just our thoughts and our emotions and everything that we do, we're sending our energy out into the world. And what we want to do is bring our energies back. So when we hold a posture like this, we're centering ourselves, balancing us, and we're working on our heart and our emotions. So that's just one way of using it. That's just one posture of many, many postures that I get into. But you have to also think the human body has a very specific design to it. You have your feet touching the earth, and everybody knows about grounding. Your feet touch the earth. You have this negative pull. It pulls the energy down into the earth. Your arms are out in the air. The air is a positive charge, like an antenna. So if you put your arms out in the air and your feet are touching the ground, you're creating the circuit of positive and negative energy. And you're completing a circuit. Now, because of the sacred geometry of your body, okay, you remember the old TVs where they had the bunny ears?
Yes, rabbit ears,
Rabbit
definitely.
ears, yeah. It's a perfect way to explain this is when you when you tune those two rabbit ears, you connect to a channel, right? If it's not in the right attunement, you're not going to receive that channel. It's the same thing with your body posture. So if you align your body posture to a specific geometry or a specific stance or posture, what you're doing is you're changing the way energy moves through your body. And just like an antenna, you're not only connecting to that bandwidth of energy, you're building an electromagnetic field or a frequency around you or within you. So this is what I believe is the foundation of or foundational understanding of body movements and Qigong, is that when you move in a specific way or you hold a specific posture, you're actually telling the energy how to move through you and around you. And through practice and building that energy and working with that energy, you can start to have a relationship with that energy. So this is why, you know, people practice Qigong all their lives. They learn about the energy. They fill their body with energy, their organs with energy, and they learn how to circulate it through them. You may see people walking down the street, you know, like just what is this movement? It's just kind of getting rid of the energy. You'll see people just shaking their hands and walking because they're trying to exchange and move energy. So there is a philosophy to it. And the more you do it, the more in tune you become with it. So that if something happens to me, you know, think of it just like as a simple, you know, you ate the wrong food and your stomach hurts. It's just something very simple. It's like I can check my body for the meridian channels. I can check which acupuncture points are stressed out. And then I could use breathing techniques and postures to work in those areas to release whatever energy that is and to come back into balance. And when you start to feel energy, where it's just another common sense, that's when it's kind of like your body lights up like these acupuncture dolls. And you can notice what's going wrong in your own body. And this is when you start to become your own personal guide or your own personal healer, where you can actually know by tuning into the body what areas need the attention to work on.
I am so curious, listening to all of that, Jason, if you have always been this calm. So, and I'm just saying my experience of you. I experienced it previously when I heard you speaking. Then when I did research for you and watched some interviews of yours, and you have, it's rare. It really is. You have this stasis, which is pretty amazing. I'm really sensitive to energy. And when I experience you, it's like this placid lake, this calm lake. And I'm curious if you experience yourself like this, if you attribute it to these practices, these postures in the Qigong, and also if you are always like this, or if this is a marked difference.
I absolutely have changed a lot over the years. And when I first started out, just like everybody, I became very empathic and telepathic. And I know those are loaded words, but, you know, I'll explain a little. When I first started to feel energy, it was very chaotic. And, you know, some days I would wake up and feel very, very depressed. Some days I'd wake up, I'd feel like I have to cry. And, you know, mentally, it makes absolutely no sense. There is no reason at all that I should feel this way, but I was feeling this way. And then I started to realize that I was picking up energies, or I've been carrying energies that were not mine. You know, as I walked through different environments, I would take on this collective energy of where I was going, and especially in the mind. I had a very, very active mind where it was almost like I had another person in my mind speaking to me constantly. And I know many people like that, where their mind just doesn't shut off. It's a constant communication. And I started to realize that we are just receivers. And a lot of these ideas, a lot of these thoughts, a lot of this conversation that comes into us, even though it's our own voice, it is not ours. And there is a very powerful mantra that I used for many years that helped me a lot. And it was, you are not my thoughts, please leave now. And that is probably one of the strongest teachings I've ever had, is you are not my thoughts, because it taught me how to separate things. What is my voice, my true voice, and what is coming in externally? And most people believe everything that comes to them is them. And I have to say it's not. And you have to learn how to separate your energy from the collective energy. So it took a long time. And I did practice Qigong. I did do these mantras. And one day I've had this experience where I was practicing Qigong. And it was very, I don't want to say profound, but it was very noticeable. I'm practicing Qigong, and you know you have the thoughts going on in your mind, or visions, or whatever is passing through your mind. And I'm doing Qigong, and suddenly I hear this click. It was like an audible click in my head. And I can feel it. It was like someone took a switch and turned it off. And it kind of like a pop. And right after that pop, it was like my mind was just silent. And I never experienced that before. So sometimes people will come up to me and look at me and go, Jay, you look like you're in deep thought. I'm like, there's nothing going on here. It's just air between my ears. And a lot of people don't understand that. Wow. But it took a lot of practice to get to that point. And, you know, you use the analogy of the still pond. And this goes back to a very ancient teaching where every single thought or emotion or memory is kind of like throwing a pebble on the pond. So each pebble creates its waves. And if your mind is always going, it's a very turbulent surface. But what if everything is clear? And like you said, that pond is completely still. If you put your own intention into a clear pond, all that energy is being used on that one intention. You know, if you have 100,000 things jumping off that pond and you add another intention into it, nothing's going to happen. You know, so it is part of training the mind into understanding how powerful your mind can be in expressing your creativity into this world. But you have to be responsible of how you create it. And the first thing you have to do is learn how to let go of all the other things that are making that pond chaotic.
That is such a beautiful analogy. It really is. I mean, I was picturing fish as thoughts and having lots of them in a lake or a pond. And if it was nature, of course, it's very beautiful. But if it's thoughts and you only have this much space, etherically or anatomically, yeah, that's very distracting. And so compelling the way you said, and just imagine if none of that was there and it was just still empty, healthy water, and you put something there. That's massive creation, massive manifestation and alignment, because there is nothing else getting in the way of you and whatever it is you intend to do or be. So what a great way to talk about the things that this does. And it's curious also because some of this stuff you've been sharing, the out-of-body experiences, and I've had them. I had them young. It was right after I moved from New York here to Los Angeles, and it immediately started happening. I would take myself to the beach at Santa Monica, and I was so excited to be in LA. I would fall asleep and I wouldn't be able to get back in my body, and I would be watching myself. And then it went on for probably at least 12 or so years. But I wasn't who I am today. So I didn't have tools like to deal. A lot of stuff started happening and I didn't have the tools to deal. So my best work at that time to protect myself was to just click, literally mindfully say, no more. I'm never having this happen again. I think today it would be a very, very different story. But I know that feeling, and it's a whole nother life outside of there. You also, Jason, have had paranormal experiences, haven't you, since you were a kid? Can you talk about that and some of what happened to you and what you experienced?
Sure. Where do I begin? I've always kind of been in that kind of wavelength, I'll say. And a lot of people say they're born with pre-birth memories, and I was one of those children. I remember choosing my parents. I remember watching them before I was born. I remember coming in through a portal. And I used to tell my mother all the time, aren't you happy that I chose you? Even to this day, she tells that story. And, as a kid, you say that it's a really cute thing to say to your parents. But for me, it's like I had these accompanying memories that, I would remember these things and tell my mother. And when I was growing up in my first house, with my family, and I had a younger brother as well, there was many of these paranormal experiences. A lot of them weren't very nice. I did have this thing. It was this shadow being that would always stand in my closet, and some nights it would take me out of my body and show me different things. I've saw many past lives as a child. And the thing about past lives is, I don't know why this is, but usually the past lives that are shown are the end of death, or the end, that end part of that life. And usually when you're shown these things, they're not the lives that were happy. They were really like the traumatic, the kind of like the brutal. And to see, to view those things as a developing child's mind, I think was very difficult for myself looking back. But we've also had this paranormal stuff going on in that house. And I don't know if the house was haunted or whatnot, because it was affecting my brother too. It wasn't just me. And I would remember we used to have a TV in the basement, and my mother would always yell, Jason, you left the TV on in the basement again. And I'd be, I wasn't even down in the basement. I didn't turn any TV on. And you could hear it. You could hear the TV's on. And as I'm running down the basement and going to the room, I enter the room and there's the TV's completely off. It's just things like this. I had my brother, we were very little. My brother one night ran into my bedroom in the middle of the night and started hitting me with a pillow. He was really upset. He was crying and yelling at me. He's hitting me with a pillow. And I wake up and I asked him, like, what is he doing? He's like, and he was sleeping at night, and something ripped the pillow out from underneath him and started hitting him with the pillow. And he saw this thing run out of his room and he thought it was me. He's had times where he's woken up in the middle of the night and seen like his lamp floating and thrown across the room, and just so we've had some weird things going on in that house when I was a child. So that was kind of like my normal child. It's weird talking about it now, but that was just kind of the everyday normal things that were happening. And I did have these past life memories come up, but I think the last one I had, I think I was about 11 or 12 years old. And that was kind of like the last time I had a past life memory until I started to have my awakening experience again in my 20s.
Amazing stuff. And that is a lot to go through as a kid, for sure. Oh my goodness, especially the whole closet thing. Oh my. Interesting, very, very interesting. And I know shamanism is part of your path. Can you talk about that? What your shamanic path specifically is, who you've worked with, who's mentored you, and how you use all of that today?
Sure. Well, it was my cousin who I was doing Qigong with back in the early days. This is like 2000 and 2004, 2005. And she said that there was a, or she invited me. Her friend was having a shaman over to do a talk at her house. This is back then. And he was, his name was Pete Bernard, and he was the Algonquin shaman at the, from the Golden Lake Reserve up in Ottawa. And I'm in, from Canada. I'm in Canada. And lucky for us in Canada, we do have a very strong native community here. And lucky for us, there are people that are willing to share with outsiders. And so we went to this meeting with the shaman. And they started talking about all these things. And I was just completely blown away because, you know, in our culture, the things that I just spoke to you about, like the paranormal stuff or past life stuff, or out of body experiences, this is all very much taboo. There was nobody that I could talk about this stuff with. And remember, this is just around the time of Google. Just around the time of YouTube. So none of this was really searchable back then. And I remember hearing this individual speak one night, and I was just blown away because, from their perspective, from their culture, this stuff is talked about. This is very well known. This is traditional philosophy, ideas, spiritualism. And they learned. The whole thing with shamanism is not only do they understand this, but they've learned how to navigate this. So for someone like myself who has no teacher, has no understanding of this world that's opening up to me, it's quite scary because there's so much you don't know and there's nobody to guide you. You're just kind of thrown into this thing and you have got to figure it out yourself. So when I met this teacher, and you know they do what I do. You know their grandmothers would do what I do. So for me, that was a confidence builder that there are people out there that understand this stuff and it's opened in their culture. It's not hidden. So it was then and there that I decided to continue my path with this shaman, and he did eventually open up. Personal classes where he would come every month into where we were in Ontario to teach. And I took those classes and worked with him for many years. And then from there, it opened up to then just studying, learning with other people, going down to Peru, learning different techniques and spiritual philosophies, and learning how to navigate those worlds. But specifically, when it comes to shamanism, the type of shamanism that I practice, it's, how do I say this nicely? It really has to deal with releasing the things we don't want to see. So it's kind of like extractions,
Oh, yeah.
things of that nature. Basically undoing things that shouldn't be there in the first place. And this work mostly happens out of body. So you basically journey and then you can see, you know, what this individual is carrying and you take it off. Which is not for everybody.
I had a session like what you're talking about with somebody many, 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 many years ago. Someone was coming on, I guess it was a radio show back then, because I've been doing this 17 years. So it was a long time ago. And she said, "Hey, I want to give you a session before I come on." I'm like, I had no idea what to expect. But exactly so. We had a very brief conversation. She said, "I'm going to take this journey. I'm going to call you back about in an hour and a half. All I want you to do is lay down. We'll talk when I come back." And I was really blown away when we spoke later, because what she was able to know about me, yeah, that doesn't happen. Like, it was so specific. It could not have been for anybody else what she was able to remove and take care of. And I saw a really huge difference after that very one session with her. And now today, I do similar things, not quite that, but I do soul retrievals, I do extractions, fluid extractions, heart extractions, all of that in my shamanic work. So I understand what you're talking about and how profound that is. Really, it's such a gift to be able to give somebody.
Yes, and I don't practice anymore publicly. I don't practice anymore. I do the work when I'm supposed to do the work, if that makes sense. So it's not really voluntary, because the word now it's like I'll just go to sleep at night, and if something comes up, I'm taken there anyways
Oh, that's beautiful.
to work. So it's not something I charge or even talk about. To just if I have to go, I go.
How do you think, Jason, that shamanism is important today, considering the condition of the planet and humanity? How do you think shamanism can play a role? And, what is its value?
All right. Well, I would just say that we have to look at our perception of our world first. And most people have lost their connection to the spiritual side of nature, their connection to this world. And in turn, it's actually the connection to their true self. And what shamanism does at its very core is awaken or have a remembrance of this connection. So what I'm doing and what all these other people are doing, it's nothing magical. And that's what I want to just say up front. This is nothing magical. This is a human experience that has been kind of taken away from us in a way where we're not taught about this or spoken about this. And it's almost like a muscle that we've atrophied over many, many generations. So, why this is important is it's almost like reconnecting a piece of yourself that has always been there, but you never realized it was there to begin with. And once you connect with that part of yourself and integrate that part of yourself, you start to experience this world with very different eyes, very different understanding. In the shamanic traditions, we often speak about the ancestors and our connection to the ancestors. And what I would try to tell people that's not a philosophy. That's not a philosophy. It is an actual reconnection to your ancestors through the natural world. You can connect through plants and crystals and just the air we breathe. If you look, if you understand how to travel, it's all there for us. And if you are connected to your ancestors or connected to this natural world, there is an inherent power to it, but it's not a power like a force that you wield. It's almost like you just are connected to a part of yourself that you've lost. And from that, you're very stable, you're very grounded, so that when someone comes to you and tries to push you around or unground you, it's very difficult because you're rooted. And I know these words are also loaded words, words like grounding, you got to root yourself, but it really is like that. It really is like that.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. I concur with everything. And I think that piece that you mentioned about people not realizing they are missing that. And it is reintegrating to them that it's really indigenous to us, this connection with nature, with animals, with the planet, the cosmos, all of it. Really important. And I'm just so curious, because for me, shamanism is very connected to extraterrestrials. I know when you were mentioning the list of things that you were able so comfortably to share with the shaman and their people, because this is everyday life for them, whereas in this culture, not so much. And I have absolutely found the same thing with the conversation about extraterrestrials. In fact, they know that they come from another place, and they know that they have had connection or relationship since ancient times, the beginning of their people. So this is just a part of their life, right? So have you had extraterrestrial experiences? You've talked about astral beings, but more specifically, have you connected with extraterrestrials or your star family?
Yep. And this is actually how I got connected into this UFO community, and why I speak at Contact in the Desert and all these places. I actually wrote about it. The first book with the late Bob Mitchell was called Forbidden Knowledge. And it's not in print anymore, but this book basically spoke about what you're talking about here. And see, I came from the shamanic place. I came from this out-of-body experience place. And as I was out of body, I'd be visited by different beings. And a lot of these beings are exactly what people would describe in alien abduction scenarios. So I remember for a period of time, I was visited by these kind of like praying mantis beings. And they were big. They would kind of, you know, have to lower their head to get under the door, you know. And they wouldn't speak in a language I could understand. It was like chirping and clicking and stuff, and, you know, very weird, you know, experiences. And you know, the grays, people talk about the grays or reptilians, and I've had these contact experiences with them as well, in this, you know, and hooded beings and all these strange things. But for me, I was already leaving my body. I was already having these experiences. So I was very comfortable in these out-of-body experiences. And I realized that they were not inside our dimension. They were just outside our dimension. So it's almost like a channeler or someone, they can feel the presence walk into the room, but you can't see them. And then it's like, I had that same sensation. I can feel something walk into my room, but with the physical eyes, you don't see anything. And then you leave your body and they're right there standing in the room with you. You know, so there is this separation from this astral world to the physical world. And this is where I started to talk openly about these contacts and why I saw it as a spiritual thing, as a shamanic thing, and not like an alien abduction, not like a physical presence walking into your room. And most people that have never had an out-of-body experience before, it actually feels more real than this world. So, you know, if a being came into your room, let's say it's an astral being, and it looks like what we describe as an alien, and you wake up and see it, you will be convinced that it was physically and real, because you're still in your bedroom. It's right there, and then it's gone. So there is this kind of blurred line between, you know, what is a physical experience and what is an out-of-body experience. So yes, long answer, but yes, I have come in contact with these things. And for example, there was one time a reptilian came, and I know that's like one that everybody fears. And I didn't feel any threat when this thing came, and it was three of them. And you know, I first asked them, you know, who are you? Why are you here? And they told me that they were from some place in the constellation of Sagittarius. So they come, this group came from there. And I said, okay. And I said, well, why did you come to see me? And they said, they know that I'm looking for Akhenaten. And at that time I was trying to study things in Egypt and I was looking at things. And I said, yeah, I am looking for these things. And they just said, he was found in the early 20s and he's being held in Rome secretly. And I was like, oh, okay, that's interesting information. And then they left, you know? So it was an interesting connection.
Were you able to verify that?
No. No, obviously not.
Well, yeah. Hi, Vatican.
I'm assuming. Yeah, hello, Vatican. Do you have the body?
It's Jason here. Yeah. Got a little question. I was tipped off by the reptilians. They would actually get it. But
yeah. Yeah. And, wow. You know, when I was in Japan, I used to travel to Japan a lot. And there was one night in Japan where I had my first, I'll say, face-to-face with a gray. And this was in Japan. And as I woke up in the astral and, you know, this exactly what you see in the movies, like this short gray was just standing right at the foot of my bed. And telepathically, it started to speak to me. And what it said to me is when I saw it, it broadcast right in my mind, I'm a short old man, is what it said to me. I'm a short old man. And I said, no, you're not. You're a gray alien. And I guess it didn't like that answer because it just turned and left the room. And I'm, I wish I could have said something a little more smart than that. Get some questions answered. But I guess I wasn't ready. Yeah.
Interesting. So thank you for sharing all of that. I know one of the things that you talk about are secret knowledge of the stars. Are there a couple of them that you can share here?
Oh, of secret knowledge of the stars.
Yeah.
Yes. In my research, what I found is that the oldest story ever told to humanity is the journey of the sun through the stars. And the journey of the sun through the stars over time became morphed into the solar god beings, the solar god mythos, and passed down through generation and generation in different cultures. But basically, the stars will always be the same. So the stars that we look up at in the sky tonight are the same stars our distant ancestors looked up at. And what they did was they had this philosophy as so above, so below. So for example, let's say you're living in a place where during the time of the year when Taurus, the bull, was in the heavens, the rain season would be on the earth. So they would say, okay, the bull or the cosmic bull now is bringing life and fertility back to the land, because now it's the, when you see those stars in the sky every year, that's when the rains are going to come. That's when you're going to get the vegetation, you know? So that could morph into, let's say, the god Osiris, which was the god of the dead. He was the god of vegetation, and he was the god that the inundation of the Nile. So, and he was connected to the bull, the sacred bull. So you have all these like stories that are linked to what stars are in the heavens at what time of year something happens on earth. And so this was the very secret knowledge of going back to the ancient priests of Sumeria. And they would map the sky, they would map the heavens, where these astronomer priests were so good at understanding the movements of the celestial bodies that they would know when the planets would be in the sky, in what constellation the planets would be in the sky. They would know when the eclipses, solar eclipses, lunar eclipses would happen. And this was also the start of the, I would say, the separation of knowledge, where they realize that if they understood the heavens, they can control society. So there was this kind of negative thing that did happen very early on in our past where, and I give this example a lot, where let's say we're 5,000 years in the past and you have the astronomer priests who will come out and say, if you have dishonored the gods, you've dishonored the spokesman, which is the priest, and to show the power of the gods, tomorrow the sun is going to be eaten, you know, for the eclipse and to punish you. And people will be like, oh, that's not going to happen. and then it happens because they knew these cycles. And then everybody would go fear and they go, okay, yes, you know, you're right. You speak to God. You're in control of the situation. So a lot of this knowledge was used to control populations back in our ancient past. And a lot of that was hidden in religious texts. Like a lot of these ancient texts, like even the Bible, is filled with astrological secrets. So that if you could teach the people one version of the Bible, but then there's a secret version that's taught to initiates how to read the Bible as an astrological book. So it's really interesting, and it's a very interesting history. But yes, a lot of these things that are in our culture for thousands of years are still in our culture today. And, you know, I know that you speak about star seeds and star families, and the same exact stars that were the sacred stars of the past, like the Pleiades, like Arcturus, like Orion, these star systems have always been exalted. You know, they were always very powerful gods in the past, because when their appearance in this, when those stars appeared in the sky, things changed on the planet. So they were seen as these highest beings, these highest gods, or these highest changes of the yearly cycles. And we still talk about them today as the very special stars or very special planets.
Amazing. So this Bible that you mentioned, I think I'm probably asking a question for everybody who's watching and listening. What is it called? Where can we find this Bible? And is it easy to read?
Oh, it's the Bible everybody knows. It's the New Testament. It's the Old Testament. It's the Atrahasis. It's the, if you go back into Sumeria, Akkadia, it's the Epic of Gilgamesh. It's the Descent of Inanna. I mean, these stories go back and back and back. It's pretty much encoded in all these ancient texts.
Amazing. Okay, so this knowledge you're talking about that was so critical, did our ancestors carve this in stone so that we could later decipher it?
They did. And one of the most beautiful places the story is in the it's in the pyramid texts of Ani, and that goes back to beginning of the first pyramids. We're talking about 4,500 years ago. And basically in these texts, it talks about the spirit of the Pharaoh going to the stars to join the gods as a star in the sky. And they had to pass through the different gods, which were the constellations, to finally reach the northern hemisphere sky, basically the pole star region of space, which was the throne of gods to sit in heaven. So it's the oldest story that we know of, where it talks about the journey of the soul into the afterlife and how it passes into the stars, becoming a. So these ancient people, they really believed that when they died, their astral body, and you just have to think, what does astral mean? Astral is star, astra. So this is where the word comes from. It's your star body. Your astral body is your star body. And when you die, your astral body goes back to the heavens, goes back to the stars, And if you are worthy enough, if you lived a good life, you would then join the gods and the other immortals as a star in the heavens. That was the first basically religious thought. And what's really interesting is that the pyramid texts was written for the Pharaoh. You know, so we get the story or the ideas that the pharaohs believed in. So the pharaohs were like the gods. And the most beautiful thing about that story is when Unas, which was the pharaoh, when he would travel to the stars, he would become the gods. So, for example, if he passes through Orion, which was Osiris, Unas transforms into Osiris. So he becomes that god, you know, when he passes. And then as he goes through, he becomes the other gods, basically saying that we are all gods and we all go through all the stages to become a god. And this is a very ancient idea. But you also see this kind of two-layered thing where the pharaohs, they were already the gods. They already were the stars and going to the heavens. But when you get into the old kingdom or middle kingdom or even the newer kingdom in Egypt, and you're speaking about the Book of the Dead, a normal person would be brought in front of the judges and they'd weigh your heart. And only then you can pass into the field of reeds, which was like their version of heaven. And the field of reeds is a very ancient constellation that we know today as Pegasus. It's the square field of Pegasus. And that's where they believed heaven was, in the sky. So there's this very ancient connection between the gods and the stars and what you had to do to pass through the stars to get to heaven.
Lovely. It reminds me also, a little offshoot, but how they always say we are literally made of stardust. Yeah. And the connection to that, that, you know, there is even no separation there. It's pretty fantastical, really, of who we truly are, what we're really made of, and not just us, but everything around us too, energetically. It's phenomenal, the connections and interconnections. And it sounds like the ancients, they were aware, even in their way of translating it, you know, in their thought processes and to their people and how they wrote this up, but still they had this amazing awareness. And it always blows me away how the ancient were also so modern, right? There was nothing primitive about them. They understood so much.
And that's really the beautiful thing that I'm trying to express in a lot of my writings, is that we look back at our ancestors, whoever they may be, and think that they were primitive. They didn't understand things. And when you go back, especially to Egypt, which is a focus of mine, or even Sumeria, once you start to read these things in their words and understand how it works, and this is where mysticism comes in and astrotheology comes in, you realize that they were extremely sophisticated and they mapped many things. They mapped the heavens. They mapped the spirit's journey, like all these crazy things. They really knew about these things, but they were also very smart in a way where they created mythologies and stories out of very high information so that people would pass them off through the generations and not even realize that they're actually taking knowledge with them hidden in these stories. And this is where the whole secret society stuff comes into, because it's like, oh, there was a certain groups of people that knew those secrets, and then they'll take these old books and say, we're going to give you the keys, and now go back and read the book, and then it's a completely different book now. So, you know, there are these traditions that carried forward, and that's the secrets. Yeah.
I love it. So you are going to be speaking, Jason, in Los Angeles, Conscious Life Expo, February 7th through the 10th, 2025. Again, the link for the tickets in the show notes or description. What are you going to be speaking about? I think you're giving two talks.
I think I might be giving two or three, and I'm going to be going over all these things that we spoke about today. I'm going to be speaking about the latest book. Well, that's actually a combination of the last two books, which is The Gates of the Anunnaki and Astral Genesis. And that's actually what we were talking about right now, which is this ancient star knowledge that has been encoded in all the sacred texts throughout the world, not just Mesopotamia, but also Mesoamerica and all over. And I'll be talking and doing a presentation on the Egyptian postures, teaching the postures and meditation. So basically everything, all those books I'll be talking about and teaching at Conscious Life Expo.
Beautiful. Well, I can't wait to meet you. And where can people find you? And do you have anything coming up outside of that we should know about?
Right now, no, that's my only focus. And it's the best, one of the best shows. So I come to this show. It's really good. So many great people are there. My website is thecrystalsun.com. I have the books on there. I have lots of crystals. My other business is crystals. So a lot of rare crystals. I work with the Oralite 23 mine. I work with rare jewelry, rare minerals. And you could also find my books on Amazon. Just type in my name, Jason Quift, and all my books will come up.
I noticed the profundity of crystals on your Instagram page and all the pictures and your travels and the things you unearth and discover. And wow, it looks like you have an enormous collection. And I love crystals, so I think that is super cool. And is there like a store on your website on the Crystal Sun where people can buy or just contact you?
Oh yeah. I have I think I have about 200 different specimens up right now of crystals that you can go through, mostly of Oralite 23. I just got a very interesting shipment of pyrite from Peru. So I have pyrite, Oralite 23, which is a very rare amethyst from Ontario, Canada. It has 23 rare minerals in it. And I also have some fluorite from China, and I also have Arkansas quartz. And I don't know if we can see, but I also have bracelets from all over the world. I have shatakite from Africa. I have diopside from Russia and some other interesting goodies, black jade from Burma. So, yeah, I love crystals. I've always used crystals. Used to travel to Arkansas all the time and get crystals. And now I'm friends with the mine owner in Ontario for Oralite 23. And I've been selling that for a long time. Hold on one second.
And while
Sure.
you're backing up to look for
Oh.
that, can you also just mention, are you a musician? Do you play that synthesizer? What do you
Oh,
play?
yeah. I play. I wish you can see the studio here, but I
Me
have,
too. I wish I could see it.
I don't know if we can see. I got guitars on the wall, guitars, basses, keyboards. I got synthesizers in front of me, drum machines, mixers. Yeah, I used to have a musical studio. I'm an electronic artist, I'd say. I used to play in some bands back in the day and record things. And hopefully I get to do that again in the future. It's a lot of fun.
Beautiful. I sing, so I appreciate it. Having music in your life, it's my first language, and it's really important to my heart to express that way. So I'm glad to see you do that too.
So I'm just going to show you. This is something we just got out of the ground a couple weeks ago. So this was in the ground a couple weeks ago, and it's a brand new pocket that's never been discovered at the Oralite 23 mine. And I'm just like blown away by this stuff.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Is that going to
So
be cut into something or is that going to remain as is in a
n
block?
no. There's plenty of material to cut into bracelets and other type of things, but when you find a specimen like this where it's a perfectly clean point, you don't touch it. You're like, okay, this is a specimen piece, and these are very difficult to come by. So, you know, a piece like this on the market will probably be about $1,500 just for a piece like this. Because it's just amazing. It's not sand. It's
And it looks
lasted
like a
millions of years.
pyramid. It literally
Exactly.
looks like a pyramid.
Yeah, exactly. So, when I got this from the mine a couple weeks ago, I made a promise I would never sell it because it's just too rare. So it's mine.
Yay. Well, you get first dibs. That's very cool, Jason. You're definitely a Renaissance man. And this is Dare to Dream. So, what are you next dare to dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
I'll just let it come through meditation. Maybe work on a new book about out-of-body experiences, which I don't have out yet. Or maybe just work on music. I don't know. Or just spend time at the mine and just to be in the energy of crystals. That's also a great opportunity.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's so nice to get to know you, and I really admire all the work you do.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And folks, I end today's show with this quote from Michael Harner. Shamanism is a path of knowledge, not of faith. And that knowledge cannot come from me or anyone else in this reality. To acquire that knowledge, including the knowledge of the reality of the spirits, it is necessary to step through the shaman's door and acquire empirical evidence. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation podcast, and you'll want to subscribe because next week's through the end of the year, here's who's coming on the program. Suzanne Giesman will be here, Mike Ricksecker, Teal Swan, Daryl Anka, Rebecca Dawson, Thomas Winterton, Marie Diamond, and Paul Hynek. Amazing. And thank you guys so much for coming, joining us, whether you're live or in the replay. And please remember always, you are truly part of the stars and made of stardust.
Thanks for joining us this week on Dare to Dream. Make sure to visit our website, debbiedashinger.com. That's DEBBIDACHINGER. You can subscribe to the show on YouTube and all major podcast sites, so you'll never miss an episode. While you're at it, if you found value in this program, we'd appreciate a like and comment, or tell a friend about the podcast. That will help us out as well. And if you like this conversation, you might want to check out Debbie's shamanic healing programs. And Debbie is available for coaching to write your book, and her company takes your finished book to guaranteed international bestseller. Be sure to subscribe for our next episode of Dare to Dream podcast with Debbie Dashner, your number one transformation conversation.